Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Gloria Mee, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Next podcast. Today's guest is Rachel Gibney. Rachel's debut novel is Jane in Love, which is out this week. Jane in Love is a time traveling novel that brings Jane Austen to present time. In this interview, we chat about her writing process, her book, and of course, some random book recommendations. Now let's go to the interview. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to the What You Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
So excited to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Rachel Gibney. I'm a writer and filmmaker originally from Sydney, Australia. Have you ever had an Aussie on your show, Laura?
I had to think about it, and yes, I did. I'm Natasha Lester. She just released The Paris Secret. She was just on the show a few weeks ago. And then I had a couple bookish bookstagrammers from the Gold Coast.
Cool.
So yeah, it's funny. Like I've been able to realize that my recording schedule works well for Australia. Like it's just the morning time. I think it's in the morning afternoon for you, and I'm like it's the evening for me. So
yes, exactly. So where are you? You in are you in Chicago? Chicago, right. Okay, yeah, no, that works really well. I think all of the states work well. So LA, I think, yeah, it tends to be if I'm in the morning, in the states, it's in the afternoon or early evening.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So, well, greetings from Australia.
Yay.
I'm speaking to you from Melbourne, which is one of the cities down the south of Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a screenwriter by trade. I work in Aussie TV. So Jane in Love is actually my first novel. My day job is I'm a screenwriter, and I've had the privilege of working on some of Australia's most beloved and critically acclaimed TV shows. About 15 years ago, I had this idea for a story about a time-traveling Jane Austen who has to choose between her books and love. That became the novel Jane in Love, which is my debut novel. It's published on 27th of October by William Morrow.
I love this. I am so excited. So let's talk about what inspired you to become a writer?
So originally, my original dream was to be a film director, actually. I saw Kindergarten Cop when I was 8 years old. I thought it was a masterpiece. I still do. And I decided I wanted to make movies with Arnold Schwarzenegger. That was my dream. I thought I would direct the movies and he would act in them. As soon as I got a little bit older, that dream did extend somewhat. I realized that the thing that I really loved most was the storytelling. Mm-hmm. I love telling stories, and my goal is to move an audience if I can. And writing is one facet of that. I still do want to make movies with Arnold Schwarzenegger, by the way. That is still my dream. So if you're listening, Arnold, just give me a call. Don't be shy.
Yeah, let's hope so. So what was that journey to get your debut book published?
So like I said, I was working as a screenwriter, just in Aussie TV, and I had this idea about this time-traveling Jane Austen who must choose between love and her books. Originally wrote Jane in Love as a screenplay, as a feature film. Then I sort of forgot about it for a few years, just sort of left it in my bottom drawer. And one day I was telling a TV colleague about it, and they said, you know what, this would make a good book because it has such a literary theme. You know, the protagonist is a writer, and there's lots of sort of references to famous scenes and characters from her novels. It's sort of a love letter to female writers, this book. Mm-hmm. So they said, you know what, why don't you write it as a novel? And I thought about that, and I thought, oh, that's not a bad idea. Film and television work, it's all contract work. So you might work 3 months on one show, then you might get a break for a few weeks before you go on to the next show. So after my colleague had said that to me, I told myself, right, next time I get a break between contracts, I'm going to sit down and I will write this novel. Working on film and TV is awesome. There's this wonderful sort of collegiate atmosphere where you're working with lots of different writers at once. The downside of that is that you're always working on somebody else's characters and somebody mm-hmm. else's storylines. So I was sort of excited about this as well, because writing a novel means you can really do whatever you want. You can write whatever you want. Nobody might read it, but at least you're writing your own story. You're writing your own characters. So I told myself, next time I get a break between contracts, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write this novel. So then the show that I was working on finished up. And so I had this break and I had a little bit of money saved. And so I signed up for a 6-month novel writing course at the Australian Writers Centre, which is a writing school in Australia. About 3 days into this course at the Writers Centre, somebody called me from another TV show saying that their script editor had pulled out, and they asked me if I could come in and start the following week. And I thought, oh, God, what am I going to do? You know, they were offering me great money and, you know, I had a little bit of money saved up and I had to decide what I was going to do. And I thought about it and I said, you know what, you told yourself you're going to do this, so why don't you just go and do it? So I didn't take the job. I stayed with the writing course. 3 months later, I had the first draft of Jane in Love done. It actually took me 6 months to write the second draft, but that's another story. But by this time, so that was 9 months later, I still hadn't worked. I was completely broke. I'd spent all my savings just getting this novel written. I was sleeping on a mattress in a share house with other 30-somethings. I mentioned to a friend of mine at a wedding then, a few weeks later, when I was completely broke, turned up at this wedding, that I'd written a novel. And he mentioned to me that a friend of his had written a novel and offered me to put me in touch. I spoke to that friend of his and she very kindly referred me to some agents, some literary agents. Mm-hmm. I signed with one of those agents. I did a round of revisions on the manuscript for her. And then she sent it out to publishers. The second publisher she sent it out to was Penguin Random House Australia. Mm. And they offered me a publishing deal. Yeah. And that was about 14 months to the day after I'd first sat down to write it. And then William Morrow, the US publisher, picked up the North American rights after that.
I love this. And so what was the process like to see your book coming out, you know, in Australia first? Like, what was that publication week look like for you?
It was really interesting. It's it was interesting because so I signed with Penguin Random House, who are awesome publishers. I guess they are what you would call a traditional publisher, and maybe one of the the big five or the big six, as they call them. So that was great because they had a lot of traditional press, traditional contacts behind them, which was great. But the biggest learning that I had also was that, you know, your book is being published and that's awesome and it's being published by Penguin and they're a great publisher, but also there's probably five or six other books being published that week. So you have to be an advocate for your own work as well. Mm-hmm. You have to have your auth platform out there. You need to be talking to as many people as you can, doing as many events as you can, and let your publisher sort of start you off with a few events. And then you need to take the lead after that and continue those relationships that you form. So, you know, if you go to a library talk and a few readers come up to you and they might send you an email or they might follow you on Instagram, then it's up to you to keep that relationship going. Which is actually, I've actually found has been the most enjoyable part of the whole process, is to meet sort of like-minded people, who they might be Jane Austen fans, or they might be, you know, women's fiction fans, or they might just love a good love story. That's been the most enjoyable part of it, is to meet up with those people and continue those relationships. And then because those people, they become sort of interested in your career and they like to hear what you're doing next. And that's the best advice that I could give to any other writer who's just about to be, or who's going to be published, is to use the publicity that your wonderful publisher will give you, but then also remember that you have a responsibility as well to be an advocate for your own work and to go out there and engage with people.
I love this. Yeah, I started this podcast about 2 years ago, or it'll be 3 years in December. And it started as a bookish conversation, just an opportunity. And then it evolved to author conversations. And I really love chatting with authors because they each have their own journey, their own experience, and they can sell the books. They can tell you like why, what was the source of inspiration? Why did you love it? And you get to get excited about the book. And you're like, okay, I need to read this book now. Or if I read this book, I can be like, okay, why did you take me on this journey? I think it's like Bethany, and she mentions your book and she's like, it took me on a journey. And I was like, okay, I need to read this book. That author tells me like this book is like amazing. I need to pick it up. So
I love that, saying that you know, like you said, every writer is different, and everyone's had a different experience, and they bring their own experience to their writing. And that's the whole point of reading a book, because we want to be taken on a journey to another world. We want to experience something different from our own lives. Yeah, I love that. That's wonderful.
I love this. So what is your process, your writing process looks like? And you're a screenwriter, so I know you have that in the background, but novel writing is a little bit different from screenwriting.
It is, yeah, it's really different. That's an excellent question. So my writing process, the big thing that I found different from writing screenplays to writing novels is there's a scene in Jane in Love where the Jane Austen character, she goes to London in 1803. Mm-hmm. And London in 18, so she lives in Bath at the time, which is sort of a smaller, more country sort of boutique kind of spa town. And she goes to London, and London in 1803 is right on the cusp of the Industrial Revolution. Mm. And this scene that she's presented with is just an assault on her senses. It stinks. The factories are sort of plumping out this horrible black smoke, and the Thames River is really polluted. And, you know, the mud under her feet sort of churns up and messes up her boots. And the people, there's so many people there, and they're heaving and talking. And, you know, she's just really assaulted by this scene. Mm-hmm. So what I found with novel writing, is that I had to set up all of that sensory information for the reader. My mm-hmm. job is to immerse the reader in that experience. If I was writing that scene as a screenplay, all I would have written was Jane Austen walks through 1803 London on the cusp of the Industrial Revolution. Like, I would have put one line, where in the novel I would have taken, you know, a page and a half to sort of describe what she's going through and what her reaction was to this incredible scene. And but in a screenplay, all of those jobs, those sensory jobs that I needed to do, appropriate costumes, the locations manager would have, you know, found somewhere to double for 1803 London. And, you know, the production set designers, they would have put all the mud in and the smoke. And so all of those jobs I wouldn't have needed to do. That was the biggest challenge and the most enjoyable challenge that I found between writing screenplays and writing novels, that there's so much more sensory information required to set the scene up for the reader. And the other thing that I found the difference between novels and screenwriting is that with a novel, there's so much more opportunity to show the characters' inner thoughts, their inner mm-hmm. monologue, and what they're thinking and what they're feeling, which was lovely as well. One great advantage I have with being a screenwriter by trade is that I've pretty much had a deadline for over a decade. Mm-hmm. Every week there's something due. And this has given me some good lessons in discipline, mm-hmm. which I sometimes follow, not always. Mm-hmm. But I tend to follow the maxim, don't get it right, get it written. Get the first draft written down. Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's terrible. Just get it down. Just finish it. That old cliche that I found it's true that, you know, any art, it's 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. Just get it down. Once you have that first draft written, it's so much easier to go back and edit. Mm-hmm. Don't get it right, get it written. I love this quote so much. I have it on my Instagram. Just get the first draft down any way you can, because there's nothing more paralyzing than staring at a blank page. So mm-hmm. write it down, and then you can go back and edit it. And that's where the fun begins. It's all downhill from there. So that's what my writing process tends to be like in screenplays and in novels now as well. Yeah.
I love that. And so I'm assuming, because of your screenwriting background, you probably do follow an outline of some sort as opposed to see where the story leads you. You know.
Yeah. Oh, I was interested. So what the guests on your show, what do they usually say? In Australia, we say you're either a pantser yep. or a plotter.
Yep.
So you either fly by the seat of your pants, you know, you make it up as you go along, or you yep. plot. You spend days in a darkened room sort of writing out these long outlines and getting everybody's character straight. And, yeah, what usually happens? Is it an even split or?
It is an even split. I have to tell you, okay. It's funny enough. Like, I'll read the book, and I'll interview the author, and the author will shock me and say, I'm a painter. Like, how did you come up with that? You know? Or it will be like, I'm a plotter, and I have outlined all the different scenes, and I'm like, oh, it makes sense, because there's like a meaning behind scene. So it's like, it's an even split, and each author has their own process, because there might be a plotter pantser, they might be just a full plotter, they might plot everything down, or they might brainstorm the characters, or they might just be a full pantser, and they're just like, we're just going to see what it comes up. Or they might have tried it and realized that, like, oh, it did not work. I had to revise it, like, multiple times. And so it's an interesting question to ask. And then to see, as a reader, can you tell if the author is a plotter or a pantser? That's always interesting.
Yeah. That's such a great answer, you know, because there's pros and cons to both. If you're a plotter, then you do get, your structure will be probably stronger from the outset.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that writing by the seat of your pants can't bring I want to say a roughness which can also bring about magic or something.
Yeah, I think it just brings like, so it's like very intuitive. I feel like the pantser process is very like, we're just gonna uncover, you're like a mystery, you're trying to uncover something, you're like, I don't know what is all about this, and you're like, oh, surprise, or oh, this is exciting, or oh, this makes sense, or this is how my characters want to work. So I think there's something very like storm-bring to the process.
Yes, exactly. And I find, again, working in film and TV means it's always been drilled into me the importance of structure. Like, you have no choice in film and TV. So at the beginning of a new season for a TV show, there might be five or six writers and they'll all sit around a table, and there will be, there might be a producer in the room, or there might be a network executive in the room. And what they want is they want to know in that first meeting, we're going to work out roughly what all the characters are going to do over the arc of that season. So structure is forced upon you in TV world, because, you know, they need to book locations in, they need to book actors in, they need to rule out days for this particular actor to be in this scene, and they've got to be in the scene with this other actor. So everything needs to be organized before time. Mm-hmm. And that sort of structure-led maxim has sort of been drilled into me forever, really. But the downside of it is that it can be very once you get to actually writing out your dialogue and your character's thoughts and what actually happens in every chapter, it can end up being quite boring and sucking a bit of the life out of you know, there's no room for spontaneity. There's no room to go, well, what if my character did this? Mm-hmm. Or what is another way that we could make this happen? I think at the end of the day, what usually happens is it ends up being a combination of both. That's how the best ones are written, I think. So if you've got a bit of an idea of the structure of, if you've got an idea of where you want to go, of how you want your characters to behave, and you might have an idea of a couple of great sort of, in film and TV, we call it like a set piece, mm-hmm. a couple of great scenes or great chapters that you know you want in there. If you can have those in your head, but also keep it flexible. So keep your mind open to the idea that this could all change, or parts of this could change. I think then that's the best way. A combo, a pants plotting combo.
Yeah, I love this. Yeah, I think there's like some magic with it. Like I'm planning to write, and that's where I'm working on right now. And so, you know, based on all of those conversations, I'm like, what am I gonna be? And it's like, you know, I think I'm just gonna be a combination of both, because I like to break the rules, but like some structure, but not too much structure, you know. So it's all good. It's all fine. So
yeah, it is. It is really. It is all fine. And honestly, Laura, I'll say that tip again, which I say all the time because I love it. Don't get it right. Get it written. If you just sit down and write it and finish it, And then sort of put it away and then come back to it a few days later, mm-hmm. and you look at it, and the structure, even if it's not perfectly structured at the moment, the structure will come to you. Mm-hmm. It will appear to you afterwards. And then once it's all written down, then you can see, oh, you know, I'd love it more if the character did this, for example, or if we held out on that big revelation till a few chapters later. Or so what are you working on? So is it a novel?
I think so. It's getting there. I think I might do NaNoWriMo. I think that's probably the plan. To see what it comes out. It's not gonna be like, I'm planning to fail. That's what I'm setting it. It's gonna be a failure and it's gonna be great.
I'm sure it would be.
I'm gonna do it. Like, this whole point is just do the work. Jill says about it, like, yeah, like, is it gonna be the great American novel? Probably not. And that's fine. So we'll see. But yeah, it's like, it's interesting. Like, I'm more conscious about my writing, like something I want to invest my time towards. And just because it feels like fun, create a project.
Yes.
It's not, you know, I think it's like, sometimes you just think it's like, is it going to make you money? Is it going to be famous? Like, all these different things. I'm like, actually, I don't. Like, that's not the purpose of the things that I pursue. Like, I pursue creativity just for the sake of creativity. I pursue this podcast because I want to talk to people and I want to get to know other people, you know, so... I think
absolutely. No, it's that's actually sort of one of the themes in Jane in Love. Mm-hmm. So Jane Austen herself never knew great fame in her lifetime. Mm-hmm. But you know, now she's considered one of the greatest writers in the English language.
Yeah.
She knew a bit of fame in her lifetime, but not much. She published most of her novels anonymously. Mm-hmm. But she had something greater than fame, which was fulfillment. Mm-hmm. She did the thing that she was put on this earth to do. You know, she wrote, she did the thing that made her heart sing. And so no, it sounds great. It sounds like you've got exactly the right attitude. And you probably, like you said, you know, you don't, if you go in with no expectations, that's the best thing. The only expectation you should have is to make yourself happy, is to make yourself fulfilled with what you're doing, to enjoy what you're writing.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, it's like a fun project. I think I've been inspired by talking to all these authors and all the different things. And it's funny enough, I just live in New York City. And so the New York City culture, if you've been there, it's a lot of like, you're always on the go. You always have a side hustle that creates something. And so I left the New York City culture thinking, it's not going to happen. I'm tired. I'm going to take a break. I'm not going to do any of this stuff. And I moved to Chicago pre-pandemic, 2 weeks before the pandemic. And so my Chicago experience has been like, I have all these passion projects that have grown and I'm making money and I'm doing all these different things and it's been wonderful, but the reality is I'm doing them for fun. Like, I'm doing them for connection. I'm doing them for a place of sense of self. Like, it just feels good. I'm not doing them for the side hustle mentality that, you know, the funny enough that it can turn into the full-time hustle.
Yes.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, no, that all sounds wonderful. I wish you all the best. Yeah, and having done this a little bit now, I can say that really the most enjoyable times in this process has been the actual engagement with other writers. It might be my editor, or it might be readers. Who love to write or who love to read and love to hear a good story. And, you know, that's why we do it. So, yes, very best wishes.
Thank you. So let's talk about Jane and Love. What was the source of inspiration and what made you decide to make a time traveling Jane Austen novel? You're like, first of all, we love Jane Austen as a unique trope. But then we think about it like her present day, it's like mind blowing.
Yeah. Well, okay. So the novel is about a fictional Jane Austen.
Okay.
And as you said, she time travels, well, because the real Jane Austen never time traveled, but in the novel, the fictional Jane Austen, she time travels to the present day and she falls in love with a modern day man. In her real life, the real Jane Austen never married or had any children. It's this great irony that the queen of love stories herself died a spinster. So in the novel, Jane falls in love with this modern day man and she finds herself so happy in the 21st century that she decides to stay there. Now, as soon as she decides to stay, all of her books begin disappearing from the shelves. She realizes that the longer that she stays in the 21st century, the more she will erase herself from history. So ultimately she must decide. She's got to decide between staying in the 21st century where she's found love, but she has lost the ability to write. She'll never write anything again if she stays.
Mm-hmm.
Or she can return to her own time where she will obviously lose the love that she's found,
mm-hmm.
but she will write her books and she will become Jane Austen. And where the idea came from was I first read a Jane Austen novel when I was 15. I read Emma. I loved it. I fell in love with the wit and the humour, the timelessness of it and the beautiful love story. And I felt intrigued about this author. I had no knowledge of Jane Austen at the time. And so I researched her biography and I felt disarmed when I discovered that the writer of this beautiful, witty love story, she never married or had any children. You know, Jane Austen died a spinster. I was considering a career as a storyteller, as a writer myself at the time. And I researched the biographies of other pioneering female writers, you know, the Bronte sisters, Emily, Charlotte, Nan, Louisa May Alcott, who wrote Little Women, the poet Emily Dickinson, and so many more of these female writers. And I was sort of horrified to discover that all of them either had disastrous romantic lives or none at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of these women had children. And only a couple of them ever married. And it's kind of endemic in all of these women, all of these early women who wrote or maybe who pursued a creative life as an artist or even a career as maybe a surgeon or a doctor. None of them had children. And only a few of them married. And so I wondered, did these pioneering female writers, did they need to be unhappy or single in order to create this art they made? Was that the thing that helped them to make this art? And if Jane Austen had to choose between the heart and the pen, what would she choose? And that's how Jane in Love was born. And the time travel element, where that came from, I love time travel books, first of all, you know, and movies. I love Outlander and Time Traveler's Wife. I love Back to the Future. And yes, I do love The Terminator with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And what I love most of all about these is the time travel dilemma. You know, like when a character moves back or forward through time in these books and movies, and by doing so, their presence in the new time changes history. Mm-hmm. And they must decide what they're going to do. Will they stay with that new reality or that new timeline they've created? Or will they try to go back and fix things, you know, to undo the damage that they've done, even though if it hurts them or changes their life or the lives of the people around them? And that, so this is the why time travel is in Jane in Love, because I wanted to set up that dilemma for Jane Austen. Mm-hmm. So in the novel, Jane, she wants nothing more than to find love. She's 28 at the time and she's unpublished and she's in danger of becoming a spinster. Mm. She needs to marry soon. So she's, you know, she's this sort of vivacious and witty woman on the outside, but she's very lonely on the inside. So she strikes this deal with a matchmaker who offers to take her to her one true love. What she doesn't realise is the deal that she struck is this sort of Faustian bargain. She's essentially going to have to sell her soul to get what she wants. Her one true love is in the 21st century. And so by travelling into the present day, she gets to see how famous she has become, mm-hmm. how much she's revered now. She gets to see that she's a published author and a much beloved one. You know, people build museums in her honour these days. Mm-hmm. And then she falls in love. And then by deciding to stay with him, it means that she will never return to her own time where mm-hmm. she'll write her books. So the longer she stays in the 21st century, the more of her books begin disappearing from the shelves. And so she has to decide that time travel dilemma, where if she's going to stay in the present where she's found this love, this thing that she's always wanted, or if she's going to return to her own time where she'll write these books and become the world famous writer that we all know and love, Jane Austen. Mm-hmm. So the time travel was a way to set up this dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I also had great fun showing what Jane Austen would make of the present day, you know, so... you know, when she arrives, she's sort of horrified by all the horseless steel carriages. That's what she calls a car. And the strange dating rituals that we have these days and all of our fashions, which are obscene to her from her point of view. So there's a lot of fun in the novel with that as well, showing what Jane Austen would make of the present day.
I love this. And so what was the process like to develop Jane as a character? Like, did you do some research? Well, I'm assuming you did some research around her. But what was the process like to then think about her, like, sending her in the 21st century, sending her in the 19th century? You know, what was that research?
I know.
Yeah.
Well, so I lived in the UK for 5 years in the 2010s, and I fell in love with the country and its people. I visited Bath. So the novel's set in Bath.
Mm-hmm.
I visited Bath 4 times to research the layout. So I went to all the places where Austen lived and visited. And then I just read everything I could get my hands on about Jane Austen herself. So biographies of her, literary criticisms, the letters she's written which have survived. I wanted to find out, did she ever really fall in love, maybe? Mm-hmm. Did anyone ever propose to her? Did she harbour this secret love for somebody, or did she choose to live as a single woman her whole life so she could write? So I read everything I could about her, and what I concluded was that she possessed a terribly gifted intellect. I mean, this woman really was a genius. She had no writing teacher. She wrote all of her novels in complete isolation on these tiny bits of paper in a little sort of drawing room in her house, which she shared with her mother and her sister. She received no help from writing instructors. She did not contact any fellow writers. She wrote this all on her own. And she seemed to me a very, very warm lady, but also quite insolent and very introverted. And she was a much beloved aunt, sister and friend.
I love this.
Yeah,
I'm fascinated with Jane. Yeah, I love her novels. I love the retellings of her novels. I love like where it has become. You know, like now, like even that, it feels like comfort food. Like her movies are comfort food. Like it's just comfort. So,
I know. It's funny. Like I'll watch it. You know, you watch numerous the things on Netflix and movies and stuff. But I'll always, like you said, for comfort, I'll always go back to watching a Jane Austen movie or a Jane Austen series. She's still so timeless. I think it's because she's funny, mm-hmm. because, you know, funny doesn't date. So she's still as funny as she was 200 years ago. And she writes great characters. Mm-hmm. So she writes great love interests, and she writes great female characters. They're always sort of very witty heroines. And the dialogue. The dialogue is always so good. So it is. It's like comfort food to always go back and watch a Jane Austen movie. Yeah, I love it. One of my favorite things to do.
I love this. Yeah, me too. So what are some of your upcoming projects? What are you working next?
So at the moment I'm editing my second novel. It's called Secrets My Father Kept. It's another women's fiction novel, exploring the similar themes of Jane in Love, about women and the choices, you know, that they have to make or that they had to make when pursuing a career. This one has more of a historical fiction angle to it. It's set in Poland in 1939 on the eve of the Second World War. Mm-hmm. And this time it's about a young woman called Marie. She's 17, and she's this sort of intelligent and curious young woman, and she's searching for her mother, who disappeared 15 years earlier, just after the Great War. Mm. And she clashes with her father, Dominic, who is this sort of brilliant but very secretive doctor. He refuses to talk about what happened to her mother. And as World War II approaches and Hitler prepares to invade Poland, Marie, this young girl, she finally uncovers this heartbreaking truth about what really happened to her mother. And she must decide whether to reveal the secret, because if she does, it's going to sort of change her life and her father's life forever. And and there's also a love story in it as well. She Marie falls in love as well. So yeah,
I love this. Oh my gosh, I love this. This sounds so good.
Oh, great.
Awesome. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with the audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
Oh, great question. Okay, so I love any genre where the story is good, where there is a satisfying ending and great characters. I tend to read women's fiction, but I also love literary fiction and historical fiction. Mm-hmm. I read horror fiction. Have you ever read Stephen King's On Writing?
No, I have not.
Check it out. Yeah, it's great. He's got great writing tips, really, really helpful writing tips. So when you're writing your book, it's this would be great for something to pick up from now and again to get some inspirations, writing tips. But anyway, so I read this book, Stephen King's On Writing. It's his memoir of novel writing. And so I became really interested in Stephen King after that. So, and I am such a scaredy cat. I remember once I watched Silence of the Lambs and had to sleep in my parents' bed after I watched it. I was 15 at the time. So I'm a real scaredy cat. But anyway, so after reading this Stephen King book, I picked up Misery and read it. And it's amazing. It's really creepy, but it's amazing. And it was made into a movie with Kathy Bates. She's like this woman who rescues a romance writer, but then it turns out that she's actually sort of keeping him prisoner, and it's really creepy. So I'll read anything that's got a great story, but usually. I tend to read women's fiction, literary fiction, and historical fiction. How about you? What do you like reading, Laura?
Oh, I read romance fiction, young adult, contemporary, some fantasy, but not a lot. I've read some horror and I've read some literary fiction, but it depends. Like for me, I like to discover like authors or hidden gems, like books that are just like they're underrated and you're like, you're not sure and you're not hyped up and you're like, let me just give it a try, and then discover how much you love them. Like that's, you know, take me on a journey.
But there's nothing better. Yeah.
But I do love romance because it does have happy endings. Yes. So there's like, sometimes I like the idea, like I know what I'm expecting and I like that fact of it. Like I have issues at times with open-ended endings and I'm like, I need to know. So, but it's like,
oh yes,
it is definitely, it's like, it depends on the mood. But I do read a lot of like different genres, but the bread and butter for me, it's romance. It's just like, it just brings me joy. So.
Oh, awesome. I love that. So one book that I wanted to recommend, this is so retro, but have you read Sophie's Choice by William Styron?
No, but I've seen the movie.
You've seen the movie? Yeah, with Meryl Streep. Exactly. With the Polish accent and everything. Yeah. I've been reading this to research my second novel because it's a World War II novel. Though it's not really research. I just ended up reading this book for pleasure because they've really got nothing to do with each other. But it's this beautiful gothic novel. I think it was written in the 70s about this young man living in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And he falls in love with this woman called Sophie. Mm-hmm. And she's a Polish woman. And the thing is, she spent time in Auschwitz during World War II, the concentration camp. Yeah. And she carries this really dark secret about this choice, hence the title, that she made during her internment at Auschwitz, which sort of changed her life forever. And by the end of the novel, you know the choice that she's made. You find out, and God, it broke my heart. It's one of those sort of classic American big novels. You know, it's beautifully written and it's got a big theme, and I can't recommend it enough. It's so retro though, and but anybody who wants to get stuck into like a big American novel, pick up Sophie's Choice because it's really great. The other novel that I really loved lately was Eleanor Oliphant Is Completely Fine by Gail Honeyman. Have you read that?
I did, and I loved it. It was
you did.
It was so good.
yeah. Like I would say, like, you know, I'm a sucker for a good love story. But like, this isn't a love story between two people. It's more about a woman's journey to sort of love and accept herself. And I loved the sort of main character, Eleanor. She's this sort of quirky, very likable loner who just goes home every weekend after work and from Friday to Sunday, just drinks on her own. And it's so sad at first. And you really want her to, you really want her to be fine, you know. And she befriends this IT guy in her office, and he sort of slowly peels away the layers of her character until this sort of dark mystery about her past is revealed, which gives you some insight into the way she is, why she is. And what I really loved about it was those descriptions of adult loneliness. You know, it's such a thing that nobody ever talks about, but in this day and age when we're all sort of in our little apartments or in our houses, you know, and most of our interactions are sort of online, it's really a thing that's sort of become prevalent in our society, you know, being lonely as an adult. And I really ended up rooting for Eleanor to be completely fine, like in the title, for everything to work out for her. I thought it was a beautiful book, yeah.
Yeah, I really love Eleanor. I think I love her journey, like to find herself and to accept herself.
And yes.
Just the role of anxiety and like what it shows up, like how, you know, her work life, her depression, like all of this mental illness issues, and being like, and the fact that she was like working towards getting herself to be fine.
Yeah.
That was a good journey.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful book. Yeah. I also love The Dictionary of Lost Words by Pip Williams. Mm-hmm. I recommend this to anyone who loves learning about words. So if you're a wordsmith, anyone who loves women's fiction as well. It's about this sort of young girl, Esme, who her father writes dictionaries and he decides what words go in and stay out. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting. One day she discovers one of the words that her father has discarded from his new dictionary, and the word is bondmaid, which is this really sort of archaic term for a female bonded servant, basically sort of one up from a slave. And this sort of leads her on a quest to discover the meanings of other words that they've discarded from his dictionary. And over time she realizes that a lot of the words that are being left out are the words relating to women's experiences. And so it's all about just what happens when a dictionary is compiled by men, you know, what words they decide to leave out. But so our experiences are shaped by the words we use to describe them. And if we don't have any words to describe female experiences, you know, how can we describe our experiences? So it's a really interesting, lovely book, which I'd recommend to any wordsmiths out there.
Fascinating. I didn't think about it. Like, now that I think about it, like, yeah, somebody has to write a dictionary and somebody has to make a choice of what words come in and what words come out. So,
yeah.
So tell us where you can find you online.
So I have a website. It's just rachelgivney.com. And I'm on Instagram and Facebook. Instagram, I'm just at rgivney, just Rachel, my last name, and Facebook, Rachel Givney.
Awesome. Thank you, Rachel, for being on the show.
Thank you, Laura. I had a wonderful time.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends, then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.